When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Welcome to It's the Bob McCallum Podcast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the Bet Rivers online casino and sportsbook app today. The podcast is set to begin with our friend John Shannon. It's also available on Sirius, channel 167 at 6 p.m. Eastern time.
That's 3 Pacific, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Well, you know, you have to look after people outside.
What is it in Hawaii? You know what it is in Hawaii?
3 more hours, so it'll be noon.
Okay, thank you very much. Might make noon sure we get Hawaii. That in there.
Yeah. We should basketball, do the show from Hawaii.
That'd be nice. Have you been?
Yeah.
Have you been to Hawaii? Hawaii? Yeah.
Oh, multiple times.
Really? I've never been.
Oh, really?
Believe it or
you
not.
You got to get out of that house, man.
Well, I don't. But, you know, when I lived in Las Vegas, we pondered and planned to go to Hawaii because Hawaii is to a Las Vegan like Florida is to a Torontonian. Yeah. You know,
yeah. We when we lived in Calgary, we'd go to Hawaii twice a year.
I'll bet you
it was fantastic.
Basketball on the agenda today. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star and Michael Grange of Sportsnet, two basketball aficionados, will join us, and we'll talk about the Toronto Raptors. You may have heard of them. We'll be back in a moment. Hi, this is Bob McCowan for BetRivers.com. Hey, if you're looking for a sports book or casino app, you should check out the BetRivers Sports and Casino app today. Play all of your favorite casino games for real money anywhere and anytime. Plus, get in the action with each sports game with hundreds of sports betting options. And get ready to feel like a VIP, because you'll earn both loyalty level points and bonus store points on every real money wager you make. You must be 19 plus, available in Ontario only. Please play responsibly. If you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, contact Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 or speak to an advisor free of charge. BetRivers.com. McCallum and Shannon back with you. It seems a bit early to discuss the future of the Toronto Raptors beyond this year. And yet I'm kind of puzzled by what we do in evaluating them this year. Can we simply say it has been a disappointing year? There was one change made at the trade deadline, and that was Poeltl. That had impact for 2 or 3 games, but seems to have settled now out to where it doesn't have much impact at all. And while this team might make the playoffs, nobody, I don't think, expects them to go anywhere beyond that. We are with Doug Smith and Michael Grange to talk a little basketball. And specifically about the Raptors. Smitty, this has got to be a season that is disappointing, because I don't think the Raptors thought they were a championship team, but I think they thought they were better than this, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I think what they thought at the start of the year was some specific players would show improvement in their game. And that hasn't happened. And that's a disappointment. Like, I don't think anybody can say that Precious Achiuwa is a better player today than he was at the start of the season.
Right.
I don't think people can say Gary Trent Jr. has had a bigger impact this year than they would have thought. So there are, that's the disappointment, is that collectively as a team, I was told early in the year, if they lost in the first round, there would be significant changes. And they're not going to, that's going to happen. What those changes are, and I think it's down to the individual improvement of the players that hasn't happened.
Grange, what does that mean for those individual players then?
Well, I'd also like, I think management has to take some weight here too.
No question.
You know, like it's this team has been without a significant bench presence for since 2019-20, and they've kind of fiddled around the edges, and the kind of swings they did make, I guess Otto Porter Jr. would count, absolutely haven't worked. I mean, injuries are injuries, but that could have been predicted based on his history. And so I think, you know, I agree with Doug. I mean, I think there was a blue sky view that if Pascal Siakam is this type of player and OG Anunoby takes this step and, you know, Fred VanVleet stays at this level and you kind of go on down the line, then they should be better than the 48-win team they were a year ago. Almost none of those things have happened. And some of the flaws they were trying to fix in the offseason have in some ways gotten worse. So in terms of changes, you know, I think what Doug says is I totally agree. You know, it's one thing to have an expensive near cap team that's got a real chance to maybe host playoff series and things like that. Then maybe you go shopping around and kind of splurge and see if you can get your team better than that. But the way they project right now is a team with their two most prominent players anyways, Siakam and VanVleet, touching 30. Fred's already 30. Siakam turns 30, I think, shortly. And I might be wrong on that. He might be turning 29. But regardless, you know, well into their primes. And everyone almost that you can think of either looking for a deal or a year away from looking for a deal, add it all up, and they're all each good enough to get paid, but not together good enough to really make an impact. So I think as a, you know, you have to, if you keep going down that path, I mean, you know, we know what the results will be.
We talk about players continually, and we are now. But does the coach take any of the fall on this?
I absolutely, Bob. Absolutely. And I know that Nick is dealing with a team that had a lot of people in and out of the lineup early in the year. But the thing that made him unique and very good was his ability to spread stuff around and create things that worked. He got so married to VanVleet, Siakam, the starters, that we don't know what a guy like Malachi Flynn, for instance, I still don't know whether he's an NBA player.
Yeah.
And I think you got to give kids like that a run and find out. And, you know, Mike brings this up often. When Nick was an assistant coach, he was the guy proponent of the bench mob. It was five guys to go out there and play and figure out how to create chaos and win games.
Yeah.
That was the head coach. He doesn't play his bench. So I think there's going to be a lot of hard questions asked of Nick Nurse in this offseason, as there should be. Whether it means a change, I don't know. Change in philosophy, but when you're spreading responsibility for the way this season has turned out around, coaching's got to be right near the top of the list.
Go ahead, John.
No, I just before we dissect everything and whether and get Michael's point on that, like, what is the personality of this team? Does it have a personality? Michael?
That's a good question. And I would say it ties into the coaching as well. So, and I would, you know, I kind of defend Nick in a lot of ways, because I think at the pro level, you know, you really do want to have an identity as a team, and, you know, you set out to play a certain way, and do you execute that? That's a little bit what you're measured on. And so in his defense, right, they've been very transparent the last 2 years. Certainly going into this year, that they were going to be a team that generates a lot of offense from their defense, that plays a very high-pressure style of defense, that wants to be at or near the top of the league in turnovers, forced, transitions, points scored, all these kinds of measures, and offensive rebounding. They really wanted to win the possession game, as they would call it, in a big way. And look, full marks. They've absolutely done it. You know, but the problem is it hasn't always resulted in victories. And that's where, you know, ultimately a coach gets measured. And, you know, and I think you have to ask yourself, well, why have they committed so, you know, kind of wholeheartedly to this philosophy? It's, well, because they, based on personality, that's sort of what they needed to do to win. It worked in some measure last year. I think that they were a little bit ahead of the curve, and they were definitely caught a lot of teams off surprise, but by surprise. And this year, you know, the league adjusts, and I can't say that the Raptors have. That's on Nick to an extent, you know. And I think when you add Jakob Poeltl at the trade deadline, that's a recognition by management that maybe this roster didn't have the balance it needed. And yet, it's done is kind of show that there's more issues in terms of, you know, now you have an even more congested floor. There's not enough room. There's not enough shooting, and you know the offense suffers. So to your answer your question, I think they do have an identity, and even just when they were in Los Angeles the other day, you know, they played two games there, the Friday night against the Lakers, and I thought they played three really good games on that road trip against Denver, Clippers, Lakers. They played really hard in all of them. That's always been a kind of nurse team trademark. They executed in terms of, you know, forcing turnovers and all those kinds of things, but they were generally undone by the fact that they can't make shots. They don't have enough guys who can create shots. And, you know, so everything else kind of falls apart against quality of opponents. You know, they suffer a little bit on the leadership front, where I think there's guys in that room who are pretty good leaders. Fred VanVleet, surely one of them. I think, you know, Pascal Siakam, a guy, you know, from all accounts and all evidence, is a really good pro, a guy you can kind of follow as an example. But do they have a real connective tissue, passion for what they're doing together? I mean, that, you know, Masai Ujiri said so at the trade deadline. Not always. And that's when you have thin margins, that usually means trouble.
Well, this is a league. Maybe all sports are the same, but this is a league that certainly operates under the premise of you have to have stars. You have to have a great player or two in order to be good in this league. Do the Raptors have any? The Raptors have any great players?
No. I think they have guys who are great at some of the things they do. But do they have a guy who, you know, would everyone agree is one of the best 10 or 15 players in the league? Then no, they don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's funny, with that whole Fred VanVleet ref controversy last week, you know, somebody, you know, in the organization was saying to us, really, it comes down to the fact we don't have a superstar, because the refs are, you know, the refs treat superstars different. We don't have one.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't think you'd get much argument anywhere in the organization about that.
Yeah. The problem, the biggest problem, I guess, that I see is that you have a team that's, you know, around a 500 team, and they'll finish around 500, and they'll probably make the playoffs. But rebuilding it, who do you rebuild it around if you are going to make changes? And I think we all agree that changes will be made during the offseason. I think they've got to. They can't come back with the same roster. This is not a young, upcoming team anymore, you know. Yes, they have some younger players, but you can't say that this is, you know, a bunch of kids who are learning to play together any longer. They were 3 or 4 years ago, not anymore. So what do you do? Who do you build around?
I think they really love Scottie Barnes. They think he is the next wave of great NBA player. I'm not 100% sold on that, but at 21, 22 years old, going into his third season, maybe he becomes that. I think VanVleet is a guy you want to re-up, but that's my own opinion. I don't think that's shared necessarily by a lot of people. And then you see if you can turn a guy like Siakam or Anunoby into something in a trade. And I think you got to investigate both those guys pretty heavily. And I think Gary Trent is the big odd one, because I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of money for him on the market. I'm not sure there's going to be a role he wants on the market. But I wouldn't want to overpay him to stay here in Toronto. That's going to be, to me, that's the guy who's the big, big question mark going into the July free agency trade draft period.
Well, he's a one-trick pony. He's a shooter, period.
Yeah, but NBA, good NBA teams need that guy.
I know.
I'm not sure he can do it coming off the bench on a very good team. And if he's starting for you, I don't think you're a very good team.
Yeah, I think you're probably
that's
right.
That's a big conundrum there, man.
No, I know you felt that way for a long time.
Yeah, Michael, do you feel the same way about VanVleet? I mean, I guess there's two ways to look at it. Is he good enough? And B, what is the option, right?
Well, that's and this gets back to I think once they made the decision not to trade at the to deal at the trade deadline to actually acquire a good player in Poeltl versus, you know, kind of moving on from some of their players, you know, I if they end up in a mode where they're trading more than one of their pending free agents, so Fred VanVleet, Gary Trent Jr., and who's the other one?
Poeltl,
sorry. You know, if they're so trading, you know, either Gary or Fred, I think it's, again, turns the spotlight right back on management. I mean, maybe there's some kind of sign and trade thing you can do to salvage a deal. But, you know, you had an opportunity, I think, to trade at a pretty good value in early February. And I don't know if that value is going to be there in the summer. The obvious thing when you're talking about moving on or moving forward is age, right? And, you know, Fred brings tremendous value. And you're right, John, there's zero replacement for him on the roster. That's part of the problem is they don't have another guy who can play point guard for them in any facsimile. The latest is they're talking about Will Barton being their backup. I mean, it's just like, it's not fair to Will Barton. And so, you know, so if, again, so you move off him, you create a hole, but he is, as I said, 30 years old. And, you know, if you're looking at the future with this group, it starts with OG Anunoby and you go down because OG's still yet 25. Gary Trent Jr., all the points Doug made are very valid, but he does, I think he's going to be relatively affordable to sign, and he does fill a gap in any roster, almost any roster. And, you know, and Scotty Barnes, you kind of just give him room and say, listen, you know, we need you to grow and grow fast. But in doing all of that and scuffling along here at, you know, maybe 10th place, maybe 11th place, maybe 9th place, you know, you've kind of almost screwed yourself out of a reasonable draft position,
right?
Barring any really luck. And I think the most likely scenario for all of this is we're going to look back a year from now or two and go, you know, that was a missed opportunity. You know, they should have been more decisive, kind of took the Band-Aid off a little sooner, and maybe we'd be a year or two ahead. And I think maybe in terms of an analogy, I always think back to that first, or I guess the second year when Mark Shapiro was with the Blue Jays. And I remember being in studio with Bob, with you, and talking about this. And, you know, that first year he came in after, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, and he inherited a really good team. And of course, you're going to run with it. But it was clear then that, you know, that team had kind of run its course unless you're going to really invest. And he held on that one extra year. And instead of you getting incredible returns for Josh Donaldson, you get piddling returns. And it's kind of worked out to a decent place, but it took a year or two longer than it could have had they been more decisive off the top. So that's, you know, that's sort of, I see a comparison there.
Well, he also had the advantage of having two really good players come up at the same time, who were babies, who have been the key to the Blue Jays franchise since then. The Raptors don't have that. They don't have players with the 905 that are, you know, emerging, do they?
No, I mean, Scotty Barnes would still be that. I mean, he's 21.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I get it.
He's got years of growth, I think. But
what kind of a player is he, in your opinion?
I think he's a really good player. I think he's, you know, I think there's things about him that you got to get very excited about. I mean, he's certainly got the courage to play hard, play in the fourth quarter and try to win games. He's got the ability to make huge athletic plays against the best players in the league.
He's not a big time scorer.
He's an opportunistic scorer, I guess I would say. I think he's got to go a long, long way defensively to kind of round out as the player he can be. He doesn't need to be a big time scorer. He can be a big time connector and a big time contributor, but he's got to be a better defender to have all those gifts float to the top. And again, going to the point I was making earlier, if Scotty Barnes is your guy, and OG Anunoby is definitely, you know, again, we could debate back and forth on him, but he's definitely of the profiles as a player you need on a good team. You know, the perfect scenario to me would have been you get lucky in the draft this year and you get another, you know, 20-year-old stud, just a guy who athletically is going to have every chance to be an NBA star, And, you know, at that point, you know, you that's where I don't see how the Raptors, you know, there's two ways to get good, right? Like you have a whole bunch of extra assets and you trade them for good players to add to what you have. We saw that in 2018-19. Or you accumulate all those assets and they eventually turn into something good. And we saw that in sort of 13-14 through 2018. The Raptors, I don't see them kind of, neither of those scenarios seem very obvious to me as to how the Raptors are going to make that happen.
Yeah, but Doug, Michael's just tweaked me to something like, how has this team done in the draft? How would you measure their draft record the last, 5 years?
Not particularly good. You know, they hit a home run with Barnes, no question. But Malachi Flynn, it's also a case of where they were drafting. There weren't a lot of other options out there, although Michael goes back to Desmond Bane, who's played great in Memphis. Well, could have been a Raptor. They didn't take him for whatever reason. They might have missed on Flynn, but again, I don't know because they never let him play. But mostly the interesting thing is all the talk about the Raptors' brilliant player development, they haven't developed any players in a little while. And yeah. I think it's hard to do because you got them split between Mississauga and Toronto, and it takes a long time. If they're not playing, can they develop? But I can't think of too many that have become really good players because they got into the Raptors system.
And yeah. Just pulling up their draft history, guys. And so they had a second round pick only this year. That's another point of conversation, but you know, Christian Coloco, he looks like he might be an NBA player, which for a guy picked 33rd is, yeah. You know, that's the best okay. You can usually hope for. We'll find out in a few years. Barnes, obviously last year. Delano Banton, I'm not completely out on him yet, but it's interesting. And I think Doug makes a great point. There's a guy you would have hoped, I know they hoped, would have been way further along in his development by this time this season. There's some discussion to be had.
But has he been given a chance, Michael?
Well,
has he been given enough playing time?
Delano Banton had, I think, his career-high 27 points against the Pistons.
In Detroit.
And I want to say it was early December. Sprained his ankle shortly after that, and he's basically not been seen since. he had an ankle. I think he had a hip, maybe a thumb somewhere in there. And he's played more games with Raptors 905 than he did with the big team last year. You ask Nick Nurse about that, he'd say, well, you know, he's given everything he brings. He gives away on defense. And, you know, it's chicken and egg. Like at some point you got to trust like what they're telling you, right? Like, I mean, they want guys to be good as soon as possible also. But, you know, the one of the advantages of having a not very good team, and that's one of the maybe it's odd to say a setback of them kind of being surprisingly good last year and expected to be, you know, better this year, is that you put so much premium on the now that you know you kind of rush past your development. And so Delano Banton this year has been kind of a write-off for that, unless maybe the 905 experience really worked. 2020, Doug points out Malachi Flynn chosen 29th. I mean, you know, yeah, you could have had Desmond Bane in a perfect world, but every team has two stories like that. And then, you know, 19, you got DeJuan Harris. So they didn't have a first round pick. And 2017, you've got, you know, that's the end. You got OG Anunoby taking 23rd. And that's kind of the end of that incredible run they had.
Right.
15, 16, 17. They just had, you know, you got OG Anunoby, Jakob Poeltl, Pascal Siakam, DeLon Wright. You got, and Norm Powell was in there.
Norm Powell, yeah.
So you got, you know, six really, really good NBA players in 3 years, and the highest spot you picked was ninth. So
which gets to Michael's point is they had amassed assets at that time because they turned DeLon Wright into Marc Gasol along with Jonas Valanciunas. They turned Poeltl into Kawhi along with DeMar DeRozan. They had accumulated things that they could go out on the market with. Look at the back end of this roster from 8 to 17. I don't think they got anybody wants. So you're not going to be able to turn – like, they got guys who were players maybe, but exactly. not going to get you a return. They just got a bunch of guys who probably won't be special. Like, DeLon Wright is still playing and playing great. And don't think Memphis didn't think that when they traded Gasol. They knew that they had something. But the Raptors had put together a group that could make that trade. They got nothing they can make that trade with today.
yeah,
without gutting the core of the team.
So are they, so is this a classic case of paying the price for winning that championship?
I think it's – go ahead, Doug.
No, go ahead.
I mean, I think that they – if you're kind of reverse engineer the past few years, 1920 was an awesome year. Who knows what happens if they don't get hit with the pandemic. You know, I think that was a good enough team to win the East. And who knows what they do in the finals, right? So they kind of, even though they lost Kawhi Leonard, they, you know, it's incredible when you think about it that they could lose Kawhi Leonard and be a 60-win team and come within a hair's breadth of going to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, that should never happen. That's why Nick Nurse was Coach of the Year, and I think that's why there's so much excitement around everything. But things sort of began to wobble after that, and you know, they in retrospect wisely didn't bring back Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka. I was very critical of them for losing both those players at that time. But when you look at how they've gone since then, and they were just, you know, I hate to say it, they were done, and they were smart not to make those deals. But from that point on, they were kind of, you know, you've lost. So from that championship team, you lost, you know, a Hall of Fame player in Kawhi.
Well, you lost four of the five starters.
Yeah, you lost a Hall of Fame point guard in Kyle Lowry. You lost a Hall of Fame player in Marc Gasol, and you lost, you know, a 15-year All-NBA type defender in Serge Ibaka. And none of those guys were replaced with anything. I don't know, as you look back, I guess with Precious Achiuwa was the one with me up on this combo. But so I don't know if you look at all those moves and say, you know, you could have done anything differently to kind of offset where they are now, but they are in a hole. And I think they're hoping, planning, you know, that Tampa Tank thing was all about bridging. And, you know, I just don't think that they've got enough horsepower to make it happen.
Yeah. We're halfway through. We got to take a little break. Doug Smith and Michael Granger are with us. We'll be back in a moment.
The Bob McCowan Podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. Unfortunately, life doesn't come with a user manual, so when it's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. Navigating any of life's challenges can make you feel unsure, whether it's a career change, a new relationship, or even becoming a parent. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. The therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and teaching you productive coping skills. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/bobcast. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/bobcast.
McCallum and Shannon, along with Grange and Smith, as we discuss the Toronto Raptors and their dilemma. And Grange, you know, look, you said it perfectly. I had written down, you know, we often talk about the loss of Kawhi after that championship year as being the significant turning point for the franchise. But really, you know, Gasol and Ibaka were the kind of guys that the championship team needs, veterans who still could produce. And they let them go too. And there just wasn't anything ready to pick up. Like, Kawhi's a special player. We get that. Even though he hasn't played much with the Clippers the last couple of years, he played enough with the Toronto Raptors to make them a championship team. But Gasol and Ibaka were keys in that. And I guess you are surprised too that they didn't keep one of them at least, if not both of them.
At the time, for sure. At the time, I mean, Serge Ibaka was coming off the best year of his career. He was awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I was really shocked that they kind of came with a, you know, I think the Ibaka Serge's people would tell you was just not a very serious offer. And he decided to go with the Clippers. But, you know, in the end, sometimes the deals you always get blamed for the ones you miss. Sometimes, you know, you deserve credit. And look, I can sit here and talk about the mistakes Raptors executives have made the past couple of years, but you do have to acknowledge, had they followed my advice and kind of re-upped with Serge and or Mark or both, it would have, based on the fact that they both fizzled out almost immediately after that, you can't blame them, but it did leave them in a hole. And ironically, because they had no centers that year in Tampa, they had to play small. And that sort of begat this whole, Vision 6-9 thing. Well, maybe we'll play with any centers. And that's sort of proven to be a little fanciful. And so they're trying to fix that one too.
I think it became fanciful when the rest of the league started doing it too. Like Mike, you said earlier, the Raptors were ahead of the curve. And they caught a lot of teams by surprise last year by being all 6-9 and all long and all quick. And now everybody in the NBA does that now. And the Raptors haven't. The league has caught up to them, and they can't surprise people.
I've never been that. I say this: I don't think they were ever as far ahead of. Like, I never once thought that Vision 6-9, whatever you want to call it, or was that far ahead of the curve. Like, I recall the Milwaukee Bucks, wanting with John Hammond wanting to do this 15 years ago, 12 years ago. Yeah. That's why they were the team that was so hot on Giannis Antetokounmpo when no one knew who he was, because they wanted to gather all the kinds of athletes. I think where they were ahead of the curve was like, okay, once we have these players, and because we don't have any options, we're going to play a very specific style defensively, right, and that's going to generate our offense. Well, the reason they had to do that is because they forgot another very traditional aspect of elite basketball, that's shooting. And, they just don't have enough of it. It's kind of come back to bite them over and over again. And the two trademarks of this team this year are, when they don't turn you over, they're incredibly easy to score against, because they're typically, they commit two to the ball, or they kind of are hyper aggressive in terms of a steal, going for a steal or deflection, then they end up, odd man behind the ball, and it's a layup line back there. So that's horrible. And then offensively, if they don't have an opportunity to score in transition, they're terrible. And why is that? Because they don't have anyone who can really, drive to the rim and scramble a defense. And they don't have enough players who can consistently scare teams on the perimeter that can spread your defense. So you've constantly got guys going against packed defense, a packed half-court defense without the means to do anything to break it up.
We sat here in November and said this team did not have enough shooting.
I think I said that in training camp.
It's no surprise.
If you look at their training camp numbers, and I remember asking Nick Nurse about this, like, I think they shot 25% from three in the exhibition season. And at the time, they go, oh, that's just an aberration. We got a lot of great shooters. And for the number of times I've heard Nick say that, and credit to him, right? Like, he's not, going to torch his guys in public. But,
they don't.
Good shooters haven't shot that great. And they don't have any good shooters, or many good shooters, I should say.
Right. And they have no great shooters.
No.
They don't have a guy.
I sat and watched the Laker game and had to Google Austin Reeves and say, he was a free agent, right?
He was an undrafted
Undrafted player. That's what I'm saying. Undrafted player. And in this day and age, isn't that, when you're going through this metamorphosis as a basketball team, don't you have to go and find those type of guys?
You got to get lucky for sure. Like the Raptors did with undrafted Fred VanVleet. So yeah, right. But it doesn't happen that often, but yeah, you got to try to hit a home run out of nowhere. And 25 teams don't.
That raises another question that we haven't talked about. And that is, what about Masai Ujiri and the job that he has done? Cause I can look at this team and say he has not done enough. He has not recognized that the team is not good enough, and he has done almost nothing to improve this basketball team over the last 2 years. What do you think about that?
I don't think that's unreasonable. I think they, after last year, which was a better than anyone expected year, They decided, okay, we're going to bring this group back. We're going to try to add. And they added, I said, you know, as we said, Otto Porter Jr. And forget the name Otto Porter Jr. If they had a player who fit his profile available off their bench, I do think their team would be better this year. Was it wise to make Otto Porter Jr. that choice? How many other choices did they have? I don't know. But, you know, it wasn't like they tried to do nothing. It just didn't work.
But they didn't trade anybody.
No, they didn't trade, you know, but then they go and they get a 27-year-old center at the trade deadline who's pretty good.
Yeah, it was a lottery pick. He's the ninth overall pick.
That's a guy, you know, if that's a need on your team, it would have been a need on your team next year, and you've filled that need for, let's say, you sign him 4 years. He should be a very effective player for that whole period. But I think where we're really going to be able to make that decision is come this summer. And, you know, what, you know, I do think they've painted themselves in a little bit into a corner, I guess is that's the best way to say it. I'm not going to start swinging and saying, look, they're this, they're that, and the other. Everything they've done has usually had some measure and some logic to it. But, you know, this is just one of those seasons that's never, everything seems to have gone just a little sour. And, you know, and so now they've kind of put themselves in a bit of a corner. They got to figure out what they're going to do with their free agents, how much they're going to pay them. If you pay them all, how much are you tying your hands in other areas? And what are you committing yourself to in the next 2 or 3 years? Are you just kind of going to be spending a lot of good money to be battling for the seventh seed from now till, you know?
Yeah, whatever.
I do think this is the watershed mark of Mazzai's leadership is this July, August, when they gotta do something. And they do have to be creative and they gotta get lucky. But they are, like Michael said, they are in a corner and they gotta come out swinging. And they gotta go, I think they gotta go bold, but I'm not sure what they have to offer that would make a bold move. But Mazzai not trading in February or blowing it up in February, as the phrase goes, is entirely logical. It's not what he does. Anybody thought that he would hadn't paid any attention to history.
Agreed.
He's a summertime guy. Now we got to see what the summertime brings, and I don't know. Do you trust him to do it, or you not? Don't trust him. And where's Bobby Webster fit in all this too? What's his input? Do they move everybody or a couple and bring back sort of the same team? I don't think you could do that either. I think you got to go bold, and I think probably two of Fred, Gary, and Pascal got to go.
It will depend
on market. It will depend on what you can get for them.
Well, of course. Market. But I was going to ask you, what can you get for Van Vliet?
Well, because I mean, he'd be at the top
of my list to look at.
You know, this is why the trade deadline was such a hot moment, is because Fred Van Vliet's a pending free agent. So
his
trade market is significantly diminished. And Gary Trent Jr. is a pending free agent. His trade market is significantly diminished. So, or trade value, I should say. So, you know, that's why, you know, people around the league were looking, you know, these aren't secrets. Like, people are looking at this and going, well, this makes sense because, you know, a contending team, you know, the Los Angeles Clippers were desperate enough to go get Russell Westbrook. That's how desperate they were for competent point guard play.
Yeah.
It could end up, you know, it could be the end of them.
Yeah.
So those were the opportunities out there. And, you know,
change this summer, Michael.
Well, that's my point, is they didn't take them. And so that's why I kind of think that they're going to re-sign these guys. And then it's a matter of, you know, maybe they're deciding that just like last year was an aberration to the good, this year's a bit of an aberration to the bad. Maybe it ends up being a coaching change. Maybe it's, a coaching change plus a little bit of personnel tweaking. And all of a sudden they become the team they think they are. Scotty Barnes takes the leap they wanted next year, not this year. But to kind of move away from those free agents we're talking about, that's going to be a big mistake. Yeah, I don't say that's going to be reflective of a big mistake, because you've either miscalculated what you can afford to pay them or what the market is for them. And as a result, that's, you know, assets, really good players, potentially leaving for very little to none return. And that's how teams go downhill fast. And that's when you point directly at management. Absolutely.
Well, I think you're right. I think they probably will keep Van Vliet, and I think they're going to way overpay him. He's going to want a significant amount of more money. And I don't think he's worth it defensively. I think he's one of the worst point guards in the NBA. I see night after night after night, he's always a step behind his man when his man goes around him with the ball or without the ball. And I just don't think he's a very good defensive guard. Offensively, he's fine. That's where he makes his money. And he can shoot a bit most of the time. So there's some plus there. But I think defensively, he's horrible. And I think that and the rest of the guys not being great defensively has really hurt this team because they have played brutal defense this year.
Well, it hurt the team when they didn't have a 7-foot center at the rim.
Sure.
And now they do.
Yeah.
And probably do for, if Pirtle plays 3 more years, the perimeter defense will get better in those 3 years because they have that guy there who they didn't have.
Maybe.
Well,
have you seen that yet, though?
I've seen him protect the rim exponentially better than anybody else they've had.
Well, of course.
I think their defensive numbers with Pirtle and Van Vliet on the floor are significantly better than they've been. I don't think if Fred Van Vliet was the other guest on this podcast, he would try to argue with you that he's the best point of attack defender in the NBA. I mean, the reality of containing point guards in the NBA today is nobody does it.
Yeah, I get
it. These guys are rocket ships, and it's basically your goal is to kind of shift them to an area of the floor where there is help and then hope to scramble when the team kind of ends up slowing them down, then you got to scramble back and cover what's been left open. I think Fred is not a horrible defender. Fred's a really smart team defender. He's constantly in the top 5 in steals and deflections, and he gets there not by gambling and guessing and hoping. He gets there because he's got incredible hands, incredible instincts. So I think he's limited because he's.
But what are you going to? What would you get for him if you traded him?
Pardon me?
What would you get for him if you traded him?
I think if you looked at what was around the trade deadline, I think you could have got a first round pick, probably protected, and a good young player. You know, I guess the question with the Clippers was would they give up Trey Mann or not? And, I guess in the end they decided not. But, you know, Fred VanVleet is a really good player. Is he a perennial all-star? No. Does he have flaws? Yes. But I think the one thing the Raptors do very well, and this, again, is going to be a real litmus test for them, is they are very good at predicting and sussing out what the market for their players is when they hit free agency. And I can't think of an example like where a player has hit free agency and been swept out from under them. And they've been like, oh, we didn't expect that. In fact, it's been the opposite. So Kyle Lowry, I think, was a free agent 3 times as a Raptor, certainly twice.
Yeah.
And each time he was going hard. Like Kyle Lowry wanted to get the best deal. He was not committed to staying in Toronto.
And the best deal was always in Toronto.
And each time he came back to Toronto on generous deals that he outplayed the value of. And that same story was Fred VanVleet. Both times he's been a free agent. And, you know, so that's sort of where my confidence lies, I guess, is that, you know, they have a really strong idea what they're willing to pay for Gary Trent Jr. and what it would take compared to what the rest of the league might offer. And similarly with Jakob Poeltl when they made that trade, and similarly with Fred VanVleet when they didn't make that trade. So, but the question is, you do all those things, you sign all those guys. Are you any better? What's your potential? What's your goals? And that's where I would have questions.
Yeah, that's why I don't think all 3 can come back. And I think Trent is the odd man out. But I don't know.
But then, Doug, that's the critical mistake, because he's a good young player that you're going to let leave, that you can't replace because you're over the cap. So you can't go sign a better version of Gary Trent.
Right.
You've lost the opportunity to gain an asset for him. And so that is, to me, if it happens, is a big management mistake, because regardless of whether you think Gary Trent Jr. is the answer or the savior, he's neither, but he's a quality NBA player with a definable NBA skill. And if he leaves your organization for nothing, that's a screw up.
Yeah. And my point would be that you got to look at the total picture. You got to see what the team is after, if he goes, and I don't know that he will, if he goes, what comes in and where are they after it's all done? Like, I don't think he'd take all these moves in a vacuum. That what would you get for Fred? Well, you get this for Fred, but if you get that for Fred and this for Gary Trent or this for Chris Boucher or this for this guy, then you look at the total picture of your team in July as opposed to individual moves. And I think that's okay. where you work around the Trent has a very definable skill. He's a scorer, and NBA teams need scorers. But whether you replace that with the guy you get for him or the guy you get for another guy, that's where you got to look at the end of the day where the team is.
But can this core win a championship?
No, but it couldn't win a championship in November. It's not going to win a championship now.
I'm just talking about Doug. You said Masai's got to this is going to be his tougher summer, and he's going to have to make a big splash. He's going to have to do something, and so that means he's going to have to do surgery on the core at some point. And whether that means Ananobi or whether that means Siakam or whether that means Van Vliet, there has to be something done. Or maybe even Barnes.
Could you look at the case that maybe this team is right now at where the Raptors were when they traded Terrence Ross for Serge Ibaka? And it took two moves after that for them to get to championship level.
No, because that team...
But they had more assets to deal with.
Yes, they did. That was my point about the bench.
But they had more assets because the bench played. This bench doesn't play. How can you become an asset if you're sitting on the bench?
They're very much caught in the middle. And in years previous, like Doug said, like. You know, Brian Colangelo was never like this celebrated figure by the time he left here. He's pretty popular when he showed up. But I mean, he drafted Jonas Valanciunas. He drafted Terrence Ross and
DeMar.
He drafted DeMar and those guys. So in a period of time, right, they accumulated really good NBA players. He traded for Kyle Lowry. He gave up a pick to do that. But unbeknownst to anybody, he traded for Hall of Famer. And he attached those to the assets they already had. And they became, they became a good NBA team.
Right.
Yep.
And Masai shows up and they had enough assets to, as Doug points out, they could use Terrence Ross to go get Serge Ibaka. And, and they became a little better NBA team. And then they had that incredible run in the draft from, as we talked about, 15, 16, 17. And they were able to use those assets either to, Pascal Siakam became an all-NBA player. Fred VanVleet became an all-star. But then, DeLon Wright was part of a trade with Jonas Valanciunas to get a Hall of Famer. DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl were part of a trade to go and get a Hall of Famer. And so, there are no assets, either in terms of excess draft capital or really young, good players who are about to pop, that the other team is really, the rest of the league is really excited about, to kind of package to go and get it, And if there were, right, then and this goes, when you look at the Kevin Durant talk last summer, any configuration of that trade, you were left with a strip roster, right? You could have put together two, three players and picks, but Kevin Durant would be joining a team where there wasn't enough depth to compete.
Right.
So they've either got to, I just think it's very clear to me that they need to go into an asset accumulation mode. It's going to be a couple of years of pain. That's what they need to do. It's been shown when Utah's done it. OKC has done it. Orlando Magic have done it. There's just plenty of examples. It doesn't have to be a disaster. It doesn't have to be a five-year thing. It's usually like a one, maybe two horrible years, and then a fun year when things start to look a little better, and then a really fun year when, like OKC's at right now, where you can sort of see the outline of something really good. And then hopefully you kind of build from that. But I think that's where they need to go. I think that's where they should go. I'm a little surprised they haven't gone there yet.
One name we haven't mentioned in terms of possible trade is Siakam. I mean, he is their best player offensively. But I mean, he has weaknesses that have not really improved. His ball handling is iffy. I know they let him bring the ball up the court an awful lot. but he bumbles the dribble on occasion, and his ability to make short shots, layups, if you will, has always bothered me. He's terrible at it. But
I don't think terrible is the right word. He's actually a pretty good mid-range guy in that 10, 12 feet range.
Well, at 10, 12 feet, but give him the ball where he has to put it off the basket to get it in. I mean, literally, he doesn't make a layup.
He's gone through a very bad three-week stretch, but the guy is still a pretty damn good NBA player.
Would you trade him?
I would investigate it for sure.
I'd trade anybody. I would trade anybody.
You're looking at a 41-win team.
To Michael's asset management plan, everybody's on the table. They have to be in order to try to get back in 3 years.
You're not acquiring big-name guys. You're probably acquiring multiple players
But I'm also not winning next year, right, either. I'm winning maybe 2 to 3 years from now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you got a lot of holes to fill.
Hey, before we let you go, we got about 30 seconds each. You going to watch the – are you big into the tournament, March Madness? Is it top of mind for you, Doug?
No, and I don't care about your bracket or anybody's bracket. I'll watch the Canadian kid, Zach Edey, because I think he's going to be the player of the year, and he's kind of fun to watch because of a bit of a throwback. But other than that, I'm going to watch? I'm going to watch a lot of the women's tournament because that's where a bunch of Canadian kids I know are going to play really, really well.
Yeah.
Michael?
Range?
Yeah, probably similar to Doug. I mean, I do try to pay attention to teams that have guys that are projected behind the draft and all of that. And Zach Edey, I think, is a fascinating guy to watch. There's the women's tournament for Canadians actually is where it's at right now. So that's probably what I'll do. And I guess my son and I'll fill out a bracket with my son. That's the only betting I'll get into. And that's about as far as I'll go with it.
Well, I don't know that we resolved anything today. I suspect we didn't. But it was an interesting discussion, and we will probably have a few more of these before this situation is resolved, resolved.
You've depressed every basketball fan in Southern Ontario.
I can imagine. I did. I've been depressed all season, so they
those
can
fans
join
had a, those fans had a good 8-year run. A little bit of pain doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah,
they don't know what pain is, Doug.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir on that one, baby.
I know.
We got to get out of here. Doug Smith, Michael Grange. Thank you, boys.
Thanks, guys.
Right, we love you. We'll talk to you soon. We'll be back in a moment. And we are back.
So what would you do to the team? You're getting rid of everybody. Are you starting from scratch?
Almost.
Yeah.
I think you have to make a couple of trades, and I think they have to be fairly big ones. And while I'm not necessarily in favor of it, there's nobody I don't like, and I don't think is a good player. I don't think they're good enough, but I think you got to look at Anunoby. I've said that for a long time, and I still think that he has good nights, and he's a good defensive player, but you need more attack. You need more dominant. And I think they may be able to get him from a good team who needs a defensive forward.
Yeah.
So I move him.
He, more than any other player, typifies the team. I think that he is the Raptors. You know, good games, bad games, can play defense, you know, so sporadic. He reflects, I think, the team better than anybody else.
And the other guy I think you got to look at is Van Vliet, and not just because, but partly because his contract is nearly up.
But
you're going to have to pay him a lot of money. The problem is you don't have another point guard, so now you got to go get one.
And you know what's your free agent dollars like? How much money can you spend?
Well, that's part of it.
Don't have very much. But they don't want to go over the threshold.
Well, then maybe Van Vliet has to be traded. Because he's going to be a $30 million guy, isn't he?
I tell you what, I would start from scratch. I'd write a letter to the season ticket holders and say, "Here we go, folks. Come enjoy the ride with us."
Yeah, are you going to trade everybody?
Why not? What are they? This team's not winning a championship, Bob.
No, you're 100% right on that. You're 100% right, except it's an unrealistic goal.
I know.
To try and trade everybody. We got to get out of here. Enjoy the game tonight, if that's possible. They get Denver. We will see you soon. Goodbye, everybody.
Alex Anthopoulos tomorrow.
Yes. Thank you very much.